How can I list them? You know, we take satellite and communication to and from satellites so much for granted now that it's easy to forget some of the uncertainties that were in people's minds at the time. I've already mentioned the ultra-low noise receiver, BASIT receivers, these things that operated at very noise temperatures and noise and sensitivities way beyond anything else. That was a big step. We needed that. Without that, satellite communications would not have been practical at that time. Now, of course, people have 18-inch dishes in their backyard, and the times have changed. You got much, for one thing, you have much larger, much more powerful satellite transmitters than we had any prospect of having at that time. The other thing was, nobody was absolutely sure that transmission up to a satellite and back down would be essentially free space transmission. ECHO did a lot to reassure people on that score, but there were phenomena like absorption by water vapor in the atmosphere, so-called Faraday rotation of polarization and things of this sort, a lot of uncertainties about the real transmission environment, that sort of thing, and we worried a great deal about those. So the other thing, of course, is that in common with the submarine cable, the once this thing was out in space, and long before the days of the space shuttle, there was no repairing it. So, and again, integrated circuits hardly existed. They were in their very faint infancy in 1960, but there were essentially none with the qualities we needed commercially available or anything like that, or any prospect of having them in the very near future. So reliability was a tremendous thing, plus the fact that submarine cables is a rugged environment, and laying a submarine cable and active amplifiers from a cable ship is a pretty grueling physical test of the equipment. But launching a satellite from a rocket from Cape Canaveral, again, is another step in testing it. The physical requirements for ruggedness and vibration resistance and things of that sort was something that we had never coped with before. A major concern, and we went to great lengths. All the electronics in the Telstar satellites, were, after we had assembled the thing and satisfied ourselves it was working, we filled the container with the electronics with foam plastic. The only way we could figure out so that this thing wouldn't be shaken to pieces during a rocket launch. A big problem. Frequencies, big quarrel. Even though the receivers were sensitive and we were beginning to have more powerful transmitters and that sort of thing, we weren't quite sure where we could locate sensitive, ultra-sensitive ground receiving stations and what frequencies could be allocated to this service that wouldn't run into interference from widespread, by 1960, widespread land-based microwave systems. It wasn't then and has never been since any picnic to get allocated radio frequencies. I don't have to tell the audience that. Everybody knows that. And our conclusion was that the only frequencies that made any sense were the common carrier frequencies in the 4 gigahertz and 6 gigahertz band, about 10% bandwidth in each of those two bands. And we had decided early on that that was the appropriate frequencies to use, but these were the very frequencies that were being widely used in terrestrial microwave systems. And the problem, the potential problem of interference into ultra-sensitive satellite receivers was tremendous. Now, there's a footnote to that. Our early concepts were not the familiar geostationary satellite, which has become the standard in many ways, well, at least for communications, until fairly recently. And so we pictured low-altitude orbit satellites in fairly large numbers that had to be tracked from horizon to horizon. and then the transmission handed over to another pair of antennas. So these antennas were not fixed in orientation. They were tracking the satellites. And that made them all the more vulnerable to ground-based microwave radio system interference. Big challenge. But I think maybe in retrospect, our concerns were overstated. It turned out to be not as difficult a problem to lick as we thought. But it did lead us, well, two things. Led us to locate the ground station in northern Maine. We think in terms of low-altitude satellites. And so the period of mutual visibility, when you could see the satellite from both Europe and the United States, was limited. And the result was that we thought our station should be as close to the East Coast and as far north as possible. And the British, for example, put their antenna down in Cornwall, as far west as they could get it. And so that was it. And also the isolated location in northern Maine in a bold valley surrounded by mountains was also chosen with a view to minimizing the risk of terrestrial microwave interference. Big challenge there too.